interview John Papa about data access in SilverLab. John is an author, speaker, consultant, and trainer. His upcoming book is entirely devoted to data access in SilverLab. This week, John gives us an overview of SilverLab 2's data access capabilities.
John, welcome to the Sparkling Client Podcast.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on. If you don't mind, I would like to start at the beginning. Let's get an overview. What are the sort of, in broad terms, the ways that SilverLight can reach out and consume information on the internet?
Well, there's lots of ways, and there's a difference, and I'll point them out as we come across them. There's a difference in a few different kinds of web services and styles of web services, and it's a subtle difference, but it's an important one. The first way I'll talk about is probably the simplest and it's most easy to describe, and that's isolated storage. SilverLight has a means of talking to data on the client. Think of this as its own little isolated pocket of data that it can communicate with that's in a protected area. This is important because if you want to be able to cache or store information on the client application, remember the client is on somebody else's computer, so you can't just access their file system. So isolated storage gives you a way of doing that with SilverLight.
So if you have somebody who is maybe familiar with cookies, this is similar, but also a little bit different.
Exactly. It's very similar, and I've heard the term, it's cookies on steroids. I'm not sure who said that, but I remember reading that. And it's very
it's catchy.
It is very catchy. You know, that's, of course, once you get the data to SilverLight, you can use that. But then getting the data to SilverLight is another story, and there's different ways to do that. One of the ways is to use SOAP to transmit messages either through something like WCF or an ASMX service. And ASMX is there for the, I'm not going to say older style because it's really not that old, but it's more conventional web services techniques. And SOAP basically is just a mechanism to pass an HTTP request with a formatted and wrapped message to SilverLight. So SilverLight can just basically simply go in and add a service reference to a SOAP service, and it will get, using the WSDL, it'll go ahead and generate a proxy class for it, and you can communicate to that service. And these are known as services that describe themselves. Basically, you ask the service, what are you going to send me? How do I call you? And it will tell you.
Right. So this sounds like it's super easy. So if I have a SilverLight project up in Visual Studio, it's as simple as right-clicking and adding the service I want to call.
Absolutely. SOAP is very, very simple to use from SilverLight. And on the other side of the spectrum, you've got REST services or plain old XML services, POCs, where REST stands for Representational State Transfer. Now, these services aren't the technology so much like as SOAP is. REST and POCs, what they really go across doing is they use HTTP to transmit XML or JSON, for example. And the XML could also be a schema or a protocol like ATOM or RSS. And they transmit those over the existing HTTP protocol. Whereas SOAP does the same thing. It uses HTTP, but it's got its own structured layers on top of HTTP where it creates its own packages. So SOAP has a little more to it, whereas REST is just simply using the HTTP protocol as it exists now. And REST is just a style of basically calling an HTTP URI to request access to a resource to either get information about it or to send information back to the resource to perhaps update it or delete it.
Right.
So you can use REST services with, you can design those in WCF or ASMX just like you can with SOAP services. And they're pretty easy to do. The big difference as far as consuming REST services versus SOAP goes, with a REST service, you basically ask for a resource through a URI, and you can use Web Client, for example, to go get that. And when you get that request back, the response can contain XML or JSON, then you have to parse that out using something like Link or some other XML reader or something like that. Whereas with SOAP, what you get back is an instance of your object that was serialized and then deserialized. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes complete sense. So when we're in Visual Studio and we have a SilverLight application, if we want to consume a SOAP-based service, just add the reference and we're going to get the objects directly back that we can use. If we're accessing a REST service, though, we're ultimately going to get XML and it's then up to us to break that XML down.
Yes, exactly. You're going to get XML or JSON, for example, and you'll have to break it down yourself.
So that brings up an interesting point. It seems that if you're consuming a soap service from Silverlight, that's a little more straightforward from the Silverlight end of things. Because if you are going to be consuming a rest service, there's a little more work and you're going to have a little more to your data layer on the Silverlight end. Does that mean then that soap is going to be the preferred format if you have a choice, if you're writing the service from scratch, let's say?
There's different standpoints to take. If you're writing from scratch, where you're writing the service and the Silverlight client, it really depends if you're going to use SOAP or REST. There's a couple things you've got to take into consideration. The first thing is, if you're backing up, if you've already got a service that exposes data through SOAP, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to rewrite those with REST just for Silverlight. In that case, I probably would just go ahead and use the SOAP-based services, whatever's there already. But one of the advantages of REST is that you don't have to predefine all the methods that you want to use to get access to the resources on the server. With REST, it uses URIs to reference resources, so you don't need to have a method that says, go get me a list of customers, whereas you might have that in SOAP, where if you want to add a SOAP parameter for, okay, now I want a list of customers, but I want it sorted by this, or I want it filtered by that, or paged using this, you might have to tweak that method call on the SOAP end to allow you to do that. With REST, you don't have to tweak it to do those kinds of things.
That's really an interesting point. So one thing to certainly consider is, when we consume SOAP services, we get the benefit of right-clicking and adding the reference, but that creates proxy and data contract classes on the Silverlight client. Well, guess what? With, let's say, versioning or adding new functionality on the server, that turns out to be more difficult, right?
Yes, it can be. And if your data doesn't change or your methods don't change a lot, it's obviously a non-issue. But if you do want to change and build things on the fly, it definitely is much more flexible to use REST, in my opinion, than it is to use SOAP-based services.
One thing I've been interested in is simply the overhead of communicating in SOAP versus a more sort of RESTful API, right? I mean, sure, in REST, you could have a bunch of different payloads. You could have, well, as you said, JSON or XML or whatever. But is there anything we can say in general about the relative size of the requests made in SOAP or more RESTful styles of accessing data?
Yeah, you want to think with SOAP, because it has extra features. I mean, when you're using SOAP, you get a lot of additional things you don't get when you're using a basic HTTP request. And when I said before I was going to get back to the differences between styles and technologies, SOAP is a technology, and HTTP communications is a technology. REST is not a technology. It's a style of using HTTP. But just talking about SOAP and RESTful styles, with SOAP in a request, you've got extra headers, you've got possibly additional security that you place in those headers, or message level security, you've got a higher reliability for messaging, atomic or distributed transactions. There's a lot of different things that you can do with SOAP, and because of those things being supported, it makes the message larger. So think, for example, you've got a simple request that says, here's the employee ID number, I want their name. That's all I want. I want John Papa to come back. Well, with a SOAP request, you're not just going to get the words John Papa to come back. You're going to get all the additional headers and all the other packaging that comes with SOAP as well. The rest of the RESTful service, you're going to get much less involved. You're just going to get the XML back that says, here is John Papa. So REST is much tinier.
Now, one thing that's kind of interesting to me, and it was non-intuitive, is that from a Silverlight client, we can only consume WCF services that use the basic HTTP binding. So that is to say, if we're working on a web project and we add a new WCF service, it's not going to work in the default case, right? Because it's going to add the WSHTTP binding. So my question would be, what are we sort of missing out, right? What would we get if we could talk to that WSHTTP binding?
You're absolutely correct. You know, the basic HTTP binding is what you need to use to talk with SOAP back to a Silverlight client versus the WSHTTP binding. When you create a WCF service out of the box, yes, you get WSHTTP binding as the setting. So if you want to use it with Silverlight, you have two options. You can either change the binding to basic in the config file, or you can create the service from scratch using the, I think it's called the Silverlight-enabled WCF file template that they include with Visual Studio. And basically all that file template does is set the configuration file to use basic HTTP binding for you. But what are you gaining and losing? Basic HTTP binding is the WS basic profile for binding. It gets you from point A to B. You got higher interoperability with that because you're really just passing clear text between the service and the consumer. You're not getting the advanced features that the WSHP binding gives you, like WS addressing or web service security that you get built in there. You can also do message level security with WSHP binding. Another thing that you can get, which I recently realized when I was trying this out, was you don't get atomic transactions with basic HTTP binding unless you implement them yourself in some way, whereas WSHP binding supports it. Yes. And also order delivery. If you want requests to be sent in a specific order, WSHP binding can do that for you as well. So there's a lot of things built into WSHP binding that SOAP takes advantage of, whereas the basic HTTP binding is really, if I remember correctly, it's the binding that was used with standard web services with ASMX files too, without the WS extensions.
So that's a good point. I can go right-click, add new, and add an ASMX service, and that will work out of the box.
Yes, it will work right for you. So you're getting a higher interoperability with the basic, but you're definitely losing some things that you got to consider. Do you need those things? Do you not need those things when you're getting into it?
Sure. Well, I like this idea that you bring up about, you know, if you're going to be adding methods, if you're going to be adding functionality, SOAP might not be the appropriate technology. So let's take a look at REST. And what I'm getting at is, let's say I have, you know, some sort of a database, you know, I store my stuff in, say, SQL Server, and I want to expose that information, but I don't want to have to write new RESTful code to drive that web service every time I want to expose a new piece of information. What sort of options do we have there?
Well, one of the options right out of the box that helps you with something where you have a RESTful service that can access any kind of data that you already have, or a data model, maybe an entity model, I should say, is the tool from Microsoft, the ADO.NET Data Services, which just, I think, went fully live with Visual Studio Service Pack 1, 2008 Service Pack 1, I should say. Now, the data services, which a lot of people still call, including myself, Astoria, allows you to basically use a RESTful API on top of an entity model. Now, a lot of people are thinking when they see this that it automatically means you have to use the ADO.NET Entity Framework with it. And while it works very well with the Entity Framework, you do not have to use the Entity Framework as your model. You can actually just take your existing entity model that you have with hundreds and hundreds of objects and expose them through RESTful services using ADO.NET Data Services. It basically creates a cloud for your data, and you don't have to write a method for get customer, save customer, insert customer, search for customer, so on and so forth.
Interesting. That's an interesting part of the server story. We can expose parts of our entity data model just by configuration, basically. Now,
yes.
The other sort of part of that, is there anything to sort of help us consume that information on the client side?
Yes, there is. ADO.NET Data Services is not specifically for Silverlight. You can consume it from other applications, but you can also consume it from Silverlight using the libraries that come with Silverlight. So there's a special client library in Silverlight that allows you to access ADO.NET Data Services. And think of it as basically making an HTTP request where it translates its request into an iQueryable query that gets run back on the server. You can also save data from the client or implement change tracking using Silverlight to talk to ADO.NET Data Services. So there's quite a bit going on there, and I'm sure there's books and books on that topic coming out as well.
Right. I hope so. John, you are a wealth of information about Silverlight data access. Thank you so much for being on the Sparkling Client podcast.
Thank you very much, Eric.